And this is lesson number 6 tonight, and I should share the screen. There we go. Good to be with you all. Hope you're having a good week and getting able to have time with your family, with your work, get caught up on things. And thank you for making the time to be part of the study tonight. I think it's going to be really enjoyable. So we're here looking at the heart of the fool, and this is kind of the second part of the lesson that Jake did for us on Sunday, with that heart of humility, that heart of righteousness that is within the heart of the wise man. And so a lot of this will be very complementary to the lesson that we covered on Sunday. I wanted to kind of list the class goals in a slightly different way tonight, just to kind of freshen it up and really remind us what we're doing here. We're trying to think of this like a journey as we're exploring the book of Proverbs, and like a map, you've got to be able to read that well. Like a backpack, you've got to have the right things with you. You want to see clearly. You want to avoid the caution, like falling off the cliff or the danger, watch out for bears kind of stuff. And ultimately, you want to reach the summit. You want to overcome those difficulties. So these are kind of the general goals of the class to keep in mind. I think a lot of tonight falls under avoid tragedy or overcome with God's wisdom, because nobody wants to be foolish and nobody wants to have the heart of a fool. What first motivated me to study this years ago is just that idea of standing up and preaching, but you know, in front of hundreds of people. No one wants to look like an idiot. No one wants to look foolish on a Zoom call. No one wants to look foolish in public. No one wants to look foolish in front of their friends or their family. Like, we all have these different moments in life that we really don't want to look foolish. And Proverbs says a ton about how we handle this. And so I want to start with question number one that was on the handout. If you were able to look at that, about the heart of a fool, the question just says, the Bible doesn't use the word fool lightly. Think of the way Jesus uses it in Matthew 7:26 or Matthew 25:3. Consider how the word fool is used in Proverbs, and what is the fool lacking in the following verses. So anybody that wants to read one of these or was able to grab the lesson, the first one is Proverbs 10:21. I tried to keep all of these references within this section that we're covering topically, roughly chapter 10 to chapter 22. And we may go outside of that a little bit, but I tried to keep them in that section. Proverbs 10:21. Who wants to read that to get us going tonight? You can unmute yourself and jump in, because I can't see everybody while I'm
reading. I'll read it, Philip.
Thank you, Rod.
The blessing of the Lord makes rich. Oh, I'm sorry, that's 22. 21. The lips of the righteous feed many, but fools die for lack of sense.
Thank you. Thank you. So the very first thing that this one's pointing out that the fool is lacking is understanding or sense. You know, there's just some comprehension that is very much lacking in the foolish person. What about the next one? Who can read 12:15?
The way of the fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man is he who listens to counsel.
Okay, so this can be answered a couple of different ways. You guys think about what Barry just read for us. What is the fool actually lacking according to chapter 12:15?
I felt like humility, you know, because if they aren't wanting to heed counsel, they're not humble enough to take that in.
Excellent. Thanks, Christy. Yeah, I was just really kind of looking for lacking counsel. But after Jake's lesson, I was like, oh, it's humility. Like, that's the main difference here between the heart of the fool and the heart of the wise with regards to this particular verse. Okay, so much participation. I really appreciate it. Somebody else, take chapter 13:16 for us. Chapter 13:16.
It says, every prudent man acts with knowledge, but a fool flaunts his folly.
All right, so what's the fool lacking according to 13:16?
Like, they're lacking knowledge.
Yeah, and remember Vera's really great comment about knowledge and understanding and wisdom, that there's kind of a subtle difference in all three of those terms. And so we want to see that from 10:21, that he's lacking sense or understanding. But also, sometimes a fool is just ignorant. They're actually missing the knowledge of the information by which you would make a decision in the first place. And so that becomes pretty important. 14:9, I think, is critical. I'll read that one. 14 verse 9, fools mock at sin, but among the upright there is goodwill. What is the fool lacking according to 14 verse 9?
I thought discretion.
Okay, discretion is a good one. What else?
They're lacking favor or, I think favor, for lack of a better word right now.
That's okay. Yeah, this one's just a little bit tricky. Let me throw out this idea. Isn't the fool lacking some moral discernment here? Think about the way Jesus was mocked during his trial and by the soldiers before his crucifixion. This idea that the fool would mock at sin, that there's just something where he doesn't appreciate this difference or this discernment between right and wrong. Yeah. Among the upright, there is goodwill. There's others that they extend favor. They are upright. They understand the value of grace. But fools are like, oh, you're an idiot for showing grace. You're an idiot for being forgiving. You're an idiot for being generous. And they're mocking without moral discernment here. Any other comments there? I thought I heard somebody.
Philip, the New American Standard has a footnote that for the word sin, and the word is guilt. So he mocks at guilt. That, in other words, being guilty of something doesn't bother them.
Very good. Right. So now this is kind of flavoring our understanding of what it means to be a fool. That it's sometimes it's lacking knowledge or understanding, but it's also this moral component that they're not really paying attention to. And what Jesus says, of course, in the Sermon on the Mount, is that it is foolish to build your life on the sand. To reject his teachings, to reject his instructions. Come over to chapter 17, verse 10. This one's going to come up again in the lesson tonight. 17, verse 10 is a really important concept about what it means in Proverbs to actually be a fool. 17:10, who wants to read that one?
I can read that one.
Thank you, Miles.
A rebuke goes deeper into a man of understanding than 100 blows into a fool.
All right, so go ahead.
So I think he doesn't receive any ability to receive benefit from a rebuke.
Very good. Both a verbal rebuke as well as even physical discipline. Even in the face of physical discipline, he's not getting it through his head. He's not admitting that he's been foolish or that he's been wrong. So let me add to the ones that we've just read together. A couple more just for you to think about here on the screen. When we are considering what Proverbs says about a fool, think of this as a snapshot. Okay, if we're just getting a character sketch, we're getting a snapshot of a foolish person. I'm going to have two follow-up questions to this. But if we stay between 10 and 22, which is kind of our goal tonight, foolish people that lack all of these things, they inevitably bring grief into their family because they don't have that discernment. They don't have that moral accountability. They don't listen to counsel. They're too full of pride. They end up practicing wickedness. They repeatedly will only do it the way that makes sense to them, even when someone with more experience or someone that loves and cares them with a superior perspective tries to help them, they keep going back to doing things their own way. They're not the cautious person that Jake told us about on Sunday that recognizes danger and so avoids it. Instead, the fool just plows right through to their own pain because they think that they're kind of invincible or they're going to get around it. There's an arrogance there. 15 verse 14 is a good reminder. I'm going to read that one. 15 verse 14 about a fool. The mind of the intelligent seeks knowledge, but the mouth of fools feeds on folly. We think about what are we feeding ourselves? Are we dwelling on knowledge or are we just dwelling on foolishness and foolishness and foolishness? I think about just reading tabloids all the time, right? Just filling your mind with foolishness, just drowning your attention in entertainment rather than being focused on things that really matter eternally. Of Steve Trammell in the Zoom call on Monday night for kids that did not get to go to Georgia camp this year, Steve Trammell made awesome comments about getting distracted from what really matters. And I just couldn't help but think of that when I read Proverbs 15:14 today, that the fool is distracted from what really matters. And we don't want to be that man or that woman. Chapter 18:6, he stirs up trouble. Chapter 21, verse 20, he spends all that he gets. 21, verse 20, there is precious treasure and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man swallows it up. Total consumer mentality, not saving anything for the future. So if this is your snapshot, here's my two questions. Question number one, what is more alarming to you, a young person that fits this snapshot or an older person that fits this snapshot? What's more alarming?
Philip, I can give an example that our Bible class studied in the Old Testament. And it was Balaam. He stood there, not seeing the angel of the Lord, and he's beating the donkey. And the donkey sees that it's the angel of the Lord. And to me, he's an old fool. He got instructions directly from God, do not do this. And what does he do? He does it.
He's totally distracted. He is just mesmerized by the money and by the popularity of Balak's servants, right? And he's acting extremely foolish. Excellent Bible example, Paula. What else would you guys add? What's more alarming, a young fool or an old fool, and why?
I think an old fool.
Mm-hmm. Because I was going to say the same thing.
Because a young fool has time to change. But if you've lived all your life and you're still an old fool, you don't have many years left to change. So I think it'd be more serious if you were an old fool instead of a young fool, because there's still hope for that young fool.
Yeah, there's something distressing about the one that has been through the ups and downs of life and hasn't figured this out yet. Loretta, what were you going to add?
I was just going to say, I mean, when you're young and you're instructed, I mean, you're supposed to grow and become stronger and better and look back and say, you know what, that happened to me once, but I've learned from that. Because if you're just, this is the way I am, and I'm going to do it that way, and that's it, I mean, that's not the right heart, you know?
Yes. Yes, so that's, you know, and there's no right or wrong answer here. Yeah, I can't. Okay. You cut in and out a little bit, but we heard most of it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no right or wrong question. This is just a discussion question, but it's supposed to make us think. Because hopefully all of us can admit we've been, you know, foolish in some area of our life, right? At some point in our life, we go, oh, man, that was foolish. But here's what I want to drive home. In fact, I'm going to stop screen sharing for just a second. I just really, really want to drive this home. How do I do this? Come on. Come on, Zoom. Cooperate. Sorry, you guys. I really want to drive this home. All right, I'll just close it. There we go. Okay. So this is really important to me, and I put it in my notes this way. Here's what I hear. I hear people that call me or talk to me, and they say, how could I have been such an idiot? And they're asking themselves that because they have violated the Proverbs that we're studying tonight. How could I have been such an idiot, right? How did I not see this coming? Which makes me think of 1 and 2 Peter about Satan tries to blind our eyes to the blessings of Christ. So how could I have not seen this? And then why did it all have to blow up before I started fill in the blank? Why did it all have to blow up? Why did it all have to come crashing down? And the really sad thing about all of these statements is we've been foolish. We've been not just lacking in knowledge or understanding, but we've been lacking in the morality, lacking in the humility, lacking in the relationships, that Proverbs paints a picture of a person that really is building their life on the sand. And so this phrase of being foolish, it is very significant. Let me get back to our screen here. So here's the second part of the question. Okay, go through here. There we go. Second is, what does it usually take for a fool to turn things around? And we've read Proverbs 17, verse 10, that it took physical discipline. And even after physical discipline, some fools are not willing to turn things around. Let's come to 1929. Can I get a volunteer to read 1929?
I get it, Philip. condemnation is ready for scoffers and beating for the backs of fools.
All right. So being condemned, like in a judicial sense, or again, physical discipline is being mentioned. And then who would read chapter 26, verse 5?
Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes.
Okay, so that's kind of a tricky one, because we're going to talk about Proverbs 9 again, about not speaking to a fool when he's in the middle of his foolishness, kind of like Jesus saying, don't cast your pearls before the swine. There's a time to keep your mouth shut. But what Proverbs 26 is saying is there's a time to let somebody know just how dumb of an idea they've recommended. You know, we talk about, oh, there's no bad questions or there's no bad advice. Look, sometimes there is. And sometimes you just have to say, dude, like, are you thinking? Like, come on, you don't really want to make that choice. You don't really want to lead your family down that path. You don't really want to forsake what God has blessed you with in this way. Please, please don't make such a foolish decision. And 26 verse 5 is about showing someone the foolishness of what they're doing. Often it takes a lot of humiliating circumstances to really turn a fool around. And I wish it wasn't that way, but what Proverbs is saying to us over and over again is that sometimes, even when everything blows up in our face, it's hard to admit that we are the one that has been foolish. And that should make us all think of the prodigal son. You know, the great thing about the prodigal son is that when everything blew up in his face and he was completely out of money and he was hopeless, he realized it was his own fault. Instead of just saying, well, there was bad weather and there was a famine, and if it hadn't been for the weather, I would have been fine. No, he understands that he wasted his inheritance and he needs to go back to the Father. In that moment of accountability and responsibility, the prodigal son demonstrates he is no fool. He's willing to turn around. He's willing to repent. So we want to see in ourselves this desire to turn around. If we can see it in the young and we can see it in the old and we can see the need to make the change, then this is what I would hope would happen. Hopefully, Philip, all of us can admit that we have behaved foolishly in at least some area. We have behaved foolishly in something that we have said. And if we could just grab those words and take them out of the air, we would. Right? We've behaved foolishly in some financial decision. And if we could go back, we would change the way we allocated our resources. Or we've been foolish in some relationship and we saw this spin out of control, but really only after it was too late. I think all of us can admit that in some area we have behaved foolishly. So as we go through the class tonight, that's what I hope you'll ask yourself. Which area of my life have I made the most foolish decisions in? And as we look at this, that it's not just about somebody else being a fool, but it's about me making sure I don't let the heart of a fool creep in to my thinking and to my life. How can these Proverbs help me stop being foolish? And I think that we will see Proverbs that'll help us in that tonight. I think someone had a comment. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear who.
Hey, Philip, this is Ronnie.
Well, Phil, yes, I was going to say, you know, all along, Sorry. Oh, you want me to speak?
Okay, let's have Ronnie and then Vera.
Okay. The that verse is implying too that there's a greater condition that's looming, you might say, if he doesn't heed this somebody's trying to help him. Okay? And that is that if he goes on and is wise in his own eyes, in other words, he doesn't take the advice, he doesn't take the rebuke, but the danger is he's gonna keep being stubborn, I guess, and he's gonna try to be wise in his own eyes. And so hopefully any of us in that position, we would respond by not being defensive about what we did, just so that we can remain wise in our own eyes.
Very good. Very good. And that's a huge part of getting past the foolishness that Proverbs is talking about. Vera, what were you going to add?
Oh, I was just going to say the fact that, you know, the whole class premise has been the wisdom of God versus our own, and the fact that it stresses that he's wise in his own eyes. But the challenge for us, both being in folly ourselves or seeing someone else in folly, we don't get off the hook. If we're in folly, we should be learning from other people or be guided by them. And if someone else is in folly, we should have enough wisdom and knowledge or be trying to learn to be able to instruct someone else. So it's twofold. We have an opportunity and a command, really, to help other people. But even in our own folly, we're going to need that same help. So it's twofold, I think.
That's great. There is two sides of this. As we're trying to apply it to ourselves, and as we're trying to kind of help others and bring them along, because this father figure is speaking to the child, kind of explaining, hey, you need to know these things. Let me invest in your heart. Let me put these things in your mind. And ultimately, Solomon is recording these things, hoping that future generations will pay attention to what he has observed and what God's revealed to him from his wisdom. So that is kind of a good segue into our very first big point here, is that if we're going to avoid being foolish, then we just really must take and seek good advice. All three of these proverbs were on your handout. This idea in chapter 12, 15, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man is he who listens to counsel. Or taking advice at home, a fool rejects his father's discipline, but he who regards reproof is sensible. And figuring out that not everything is going to be learned the hard way, as Vera is saying, like looking out at others and learning from their foolishness. Understanding is a fountain of life to one who has it, but the discipline of fools is folly. I don't have to wait for that discipline. I can understand by observing the world around me and certainly the behavior of others around me. So on this point, where's my thing? Oh, so this one that we've got to take and seek good advice. I want you to think for a moment, what are the qualities we are looking for in a person that we would go to and ask their advice, right? Because a lot of people will just sit down at the hairdresser and they'll start, you know, getting their hair cut and they'll tell what's on their mind. And then suddenly they're taking advice from their hairdresser, which may not be the most qualified person to seek good counsel from, right? So other than having a pair of scissors and a beautician certificate, what are the actual qualities that someone should have when we're going to them for advice? Think about what qualities we might say.
I think most of all is having experience to who someone who's actually been through it and has made it to the other side, and someone who we can actually, who can help guide us through that journey.
Okay, so someone with experience is often what we're looking for. It's another person in a similar stage of life, or someone even 5 to 10 years ahead of us that they've just completed this and done it well, right? We think about Hebrews 13 talking about follow their faith. So someone that's done it well there. What else?
Someone who is strongly spiritual, close to God. If we're going to be seeking God's, to be like God's wisdom, we better be seeking advice from someone who's close to God.
Very good. So spiritual maturity really needs to be on this list, someone that's close to God and that's going to have a godly heart about this. What else would we add?
Someone with integrity.
Reputation.
Okay, I heard integrity, and what was the second one?
Good reputation.
Okay, yeah. So a reputation for like for good works, a reputation for making wise decisions. So experience, mature spiritual, integrity, reputation. What else?
Philip, if I may, I've been a CPA for about 20-something years, and something that does a CPA well is they're independent. So when I seek advice, I want someone who's independent of the matter who can take an objective approach.
Yeah, someone that's impartial. That's a huge quality that can be very, very useful. Proverbs is going to talk to us about people that take bribes, and we're going to get into that next Wednesday. So that can be a big problem. Impartial. Yeah, and each of these ultimately, right, they're qualities that God himself possesses, that he has ultimate experience. He has the ultimate reputation. He's always the impartial and the gracious and forgiving judge. All of those qualities are there. So
Philip,
yes, go ahead.
We could also say right motives, right? Because sometimes when you share your life with people, they actually don't have the right motive for even wanting to listen to you or to share in a way that's helpful for you. So I think even for us, it could be tempting what someone's telling you in their folly to both share what they're telling you or, and I know you touched on what the heart should be for that person that's seeking that advice, but also the person who's trying to give the advice, that their heart and their intentions are right. And I know you wouldn't think that people wouldn't want to, you know, wouldn't really be true to you when you're talking to them, but that's happened. I've experienced that. I don't know that other people have, but you want to know that they're actually seeking your best. We know God is. And so we want to make sure that people know that from us.
Yes, that's so important because when you've gone to someone for advice and they're using, you know, this moment of vulnerability and they start using it like for political maneuvering at work so that they can get ahead. And like you came to them for help on your project and they're running around to HR saying he or she doesn't know what they're doing. And I want that promotion. Like it's so frustrating when people are backstabbing and they have these bad motives when you were coming to them for counsel and for advice, trying to improve. Sewell, I see you're unmuted. Did you have a comment?
Yeah, from a purely negative point of view, it's a bad choice of counselors when we go to somebody that's failed. I've noticed so often when people are having marriage troubles, in many instances they go to other people who have failed in their marriage, and I suppose it's because they want a little sympathy or something of the kind. But a failure in finance or a failure in marriage or a failure in any area is not the kind of counselor to go to for wisdom.
So let me tell my story on that. When I was a preaching intern in Texas, we were taking all the teenagers to go bowling, and I just asked one of the dads, I was like, hey, could you help me improve my spin here on this ball? I should have asked what he bowled before I asked him for advice. I realized that he bowled a lower score than I did. Why was I taking advice for someone that was already behind where I was? And Sewell's exactly right. We've seen it too many times that, and it may be what a little bit of what Vera said. We're worried about people's motives. It may be that we think someone can relate to us in their own failures, but we need people that can lift us up, not just people that can commiserate with us while we're down. Thank you, Sewell. Just the other Jake or no? Okay. Well, let's keep going. So the fool, I keep messing up my screen. The fool has to avoid being foolish. We have to take and seek this good advice. Next big idea. We've got to control our anger. And we talked a lot about this on Sunday, but here's three more Proverbs. Only one of them is out of the section. A fool's anger is known at once. A prudent man conceals dishonor. A wise man is cautious and turns away from evil. A fool is arrogant and careless. A quick-tempered man acts foolishly. A man of evil devices is hated. Exercise self-discipline. A fool always loses his temper, but a wise man holds it back. This is one of those really important principles in Proverbs. We could have done a whole class just on anger from the Proverbs, because when we walk with people and we spend our time around people that do not control their temper and do not manage anger in a godly fashion, it rubs off on us. And we find ourselves becoming more explosive than we would have ever expected, because there's a strong influence among those that do not control their anger. We have to control it. Let's see what the prudent man can recognize when he is dishonoring. A prudent man can confront a situation with great tension and yet continue to be gracious. Have you ever watched a person come into an argument between two parties and they come in as a peacemaker and they know that the tension is so thick in the room and there's so much emotional drama in the background, but they are able to speak with gentleness and with clarity to both parties? That's a wise person. We appreciate them. But then you see others that they can come into that same situation where there's a lot of tension and it is like setting off a stick of dynamite, because they're all over the place reacting to the anger that is all around them. We must come back and control our anger. Who can you think of in the scriptures that does a good job of controlling their anger? Who can you think of in the scriptures that is a role model even for controlling their anger?
Jesus, of course, you know, when they were spitting and, you know, lying about him, and he didn't, he was like a lamb to the slaughter. He didn't, you know, lash out.
Fantastic. So Jesus in his trial and his crucifixion, not retaliating against the mistreatment there. Who else do we think of as role models of controlling their anger?
I think of Stephen, who modeled Jesus. In fact, he almost spoke, exactly the words that Jesus spoke when he was being stoned.
Very good, Paula. Thank you. Who else?
So, I got kind of a weird one. I think actually James and John, these sons of thunder, like, you know, we hear that they had that fire within, but we don't hear about them exercising it, you know, very often. And that's something that, you know, to one of the classes that we had previously, they probably had to spend a lot of effort, you know, controlling themselves on that, and, you know, seem to have done a pretty good job.
Thank you, Daniel. Yeah, especially when we think of John, just full of passion, such a passionate person. And he takes that passion and that zeal and becomes the apostle of love. He says so much about God being love in his epistles. And we read his gospel and we get this closeness and this nearness to Jesus, looking through the eyes of a dear friend. That doesn't come easy. That came with heart molding and transformation in his life. I think of Naaman's servant. Remember when Naaman was just so angry and ready to storm off, and he thought that this lousy Jordan River wasn't worth anything. But this servant comes and calmly speaks to his master and is able to bring peace to that situation. Anybody else y'all want to mention tonight as a role model of controlling our anger?
Moses is mentioned as the meekest man of his time, but occasionally he lost it. And I think that sometimes when we lose it, we see ourselves as we are and back off a little bit.
Very good. And I was hoping somebody would say Moses, because we always think about him striking the rock, but he deserves some credit for 40 years of not striking the rock.
And when he was accused by Aaron and Miriam, and then on other occasions when he was challenged, he controlled himself pretty well.
Outstanding. Yes, Moses is a tremendous example. Any others before? Yes, go ahead.
Can I mention a woman? Abigail.
That's what I was thinking of.
Opposite of her husband. and she saved the day for him, for David's men, for David. She really saved the day.
Yes, she had such wisdom to just de-escalate the situation, to bring everybody back to some not just common sense, but to faith, to come back and put their faith in God. And remember, in Proverbs, it's not just someone lacking information. It's someone who's lacking the moral discretion. And Abigail brings that moral discretion back into the equation, and she is to be praised for it. I guess that's why we have 8 or 9 different Abbeys running around Embry Hills, right? We love that. Okay, let's go to our next one. I know that everybody wants to make lots of comments whenever the slide says be slow to speak. You know, it's like I almost put this at the very end just so that I wouldn't kill my comments tonight. But don't you love Proverbs 10, verse 8? The wise of heart will receive commands, but a babbling fool will be ruined. We have to know when to stop. I think in the Zeal Workbook that I put out several years ago on the section about communication, I have a sentence or two about speaking with clarity and with brevity. And whenever my little brother teaches it, he just cracks up laughing. He's like, Philip has no room whatsoever to write about speaking with brevity. But even evangelists have to learn to shut our mouths. 10:18, who conceals hatred has lying lips, and he who spreads slander is a fool. When we're stabbing people in the back with slander, that is a foolish behavior. You're not going to get away with that. 14 verse 3, in the mouth of the foolish is a rod for his back. The lips of the wise will protect him. The foolish person is always stirring up trouble, especially for themselves. And then 17:28, even a fool when he keeps silent is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he is considered prudent. That's one of those just when you don't know what to say, don't try to fill dead air. Just stop. What is the good preaching advice? Stand up, tell us what you're going to tell us, and then tell us that you told us, and sit down. There have been several times that I've preached and my material hasn't filled like the 45-minute time that I was allotted. And I'd say maybe I only had 30 minutes of material or 35. And I've looked at my notes and said, well, I could keep talking off the cuff, or I could just sit down. And this is the proverb that reminds me, Philip, sit down. So fools definitely slow to speak, like James talks about. All right. Choosing our friends wisely. Don't get caught up in the foolishness of others. 13:20, who walks with wise men will be wise. The companion of fools will suffer harm. Like an archer who wounds everyone, so is he who hires a fool or who hires those who pass by. And 14:1, the wise woman builds her house, but the foolish tears it down with her own hands. We're going to talk some more about relationships in about 2 weeks, but why is wisdom and foolishness being mentioned in these verses in terms of our relationships? What's the real value here in choosing friends?
Well, we just mentioned that we would get advice from others, and so that's why when you're choosing friends, you're looking for those things like how will this person help me get to heaven? Will this person deter me from that ultimate goal? Are they following Christ? Do they make good decisions? I mean, and so sometimes, you know, you're chosen, right? And somebody just wants to be your friend. But we need to be on guard for that too, because there's always, we need to, I guess, be able to discern, whether someone is, appropriately a person that should be in your life.
Yeah, that's right. Are they going to be a positive and uplifting influence? Well said, Vera. Who else had a comment?
They also say that you become like the three people that you're most around. And so you need to be very careful who those three people are because you become more like them.
Yeah, we've talked about before how Jesus had even among the 12 apostles, he had three or four that were his closest apostles, and then on out, and then on out, and then the crowds and everybody else. But, you know, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, that's a home he wanted to be in, right? With these apostles, he wanted to give his time to them. And to Christy's point, the phrase that I always remember is that your friends determine the quality and direction of your life. Your friends determine the quality and the direction of your life. And that just becomes so obvious to us as time goes on. We want to walk with wise men, that their wisdom and their influence and their ability to, you know, stay level-headed in difficult situations, that we see that and want to model it. Any other comments here? I don't want to leave chapter 14, verse 1 without just a little bit of a comment. And that is that we said the book of Proverbs begins and ends with women, and wisdom is personified as a wise woman. And then this amazing wife and mother is praised and exalted at the end of the book. Chapter 14, verse 1 is the heartbreaking one. It's to say that women who God has gifted with this great ability to influence and with the power of their words and the beauty of their heart and their character, that foolish women will tear down their own house. There is a reality and a special danger of the people that become self-destructive. And we need to remember that foolishness is ultimately self-destructive, and we won't be the only one we hurt. There will be casualties of those that are in our home and in our sphere. And it's a reminder to dig deep and to listen to these calls of wisdom that we talked about from chapter 8, so that we choose that path of wisdom.
So, Philip, yes, I want to say something about sometimes we may need to choose to leave our friends. So some childhood friends, we spend some time together. We had some great time, but later I find out that we are so different in terms of the things we value. For example, they can value money much more than their family. It's so hard for me to break up with them. And some of my friends have adultery. But we are friends since we were in elementary school. So it was really difficult, but for me, sometimes it gets to a point that I have to leave them for better friends. So they could be bad influence, but I just haven't noticed it from the beginning.
That's really true, Chiliang. That's really true. It's so hard to take someone that's been in your life for years and years, but to realize that over time, their values have gone more and more towards being okay with evil things and participating in evil things and having idols in their life of money. And then your values are moving more towards God, and you're trying to walk with wisdom, and you just realize that even though you have maybe your school years in common or your profession in common, that morally you have so little in common that influence needs to be removed from our lives. Great comment, Chiliang, and great discernment for you to recognize that. Our final one, of course, is to put our faith in God, that if we want to avoid being foolish, then it really does begin with the fear of the Lord and following God. It really requires us to not just trust in ourselves, but to make sure that we are walking with wisdom. And it requires us to learn as we go, right? 26:11, like a dog that returns to its vomit is a fool who repeats his folly. We have to see that living as a fool is getting us nowhere, and that there are much better ways for us to live. So here was our application question to take this, what we've talked about with avoiding foolishness, and this big idea of putting our faith in God. When Psalm 14:1 says, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Why is that so foolish? Well, I hope that as you're thinking about what we've looked at tonight about foolishness, what is it about this that is just so foolish? I think it's more than just, oh, I've looked at the evidence and I've reached a faulty conclusion, right? You should be able to say there's all this evidence of creation and reach a correct conclusion, but there's more to it. Sewell, were you going to say something?
Yeah, I think the term fool, as we've seen in this study, indicates a will to be a fool. It's not a person who's has a low IQ or a person who had a little education, but the person that chooses to be a fool has to say there is no God, because if God is recognized, then he can it puts him in a very, very bad light to insist on being a fool when God is there to judge him and to reward him for wisdom or to punish him for his folly. I think that's the idea here.
Okay, well, then I feel good, because that means I'm on the right track. Who else was going to make a comment? Okay, so to deny God's existence, that is foolish. But think about what we've said the fool is doing tonight. The fool is the one who rejects counsel. And what we're talking about is that the Creator himself is giving us counsel on how to live. He's giving us counsel on how to operate and make choices. And to say that there is no God is not just to reject God's existence, but it's to reject God's counsel. And fools, they repeatedly reject counsel. Also, discipline. If you say in your heart there is no God and you go out to live a sinful life, God has so ordered this world that there will be severe consequences to that sin. And God intends for the pain in this life to be disciplinary for us at different times. Not all pain, but there is pain in life that is disciplinary. And so to be the fool that says there is no God is, yes, to deny the existence, but also to deny the counsel and to deny that discipline. That, like the verse Miles read for us from, I think it was 17:10, that with 100 blows, he still won't admit that he's been wrong. And then to deny that moral discretion, the moral laws, to recognize that there is good and evil in this world. Only a fool could deny that there is good and evil in this world and not choose to seek the good in this world. And finally, the chances to repent. The fool in Proverbs is being told, come and listen. Like the naive and the simple ones are being invited to leave their folly. And yet to reject God's existence, his counsel, his discipline, his morality, and the chances to repent. That is truly a fool. Yes, Christy, what did you want to add?
Well, I was going to say, I used to work with an environmental education center where there were a lot of PhDs who worked in, and they believed in evolution and whatnot. And some of them, you know, started off believing and then they fell away. And I attribute some of that to the fact that it was a focus more on man's wisdom, and another one was who they surrounded themselves with. And they didn't want to look like they were, you know, going to be foolish and thinking that there was some God, when they wanted to be looking wise and accepted, which is actually the opposite was true. but that's, I've seen that happen as well.
Excellent. Yeah. So it's again, we're kind of like Paul is writing to the Corinthians in chapters 1, 2, and 3, that the foolishness of God is better than the wisest thing of a man. The Gentiles, they just run after the wisdom of the world rather than the wisdom of God. And we can definitely fall into that behavior and that trap. All right, so one final slide here on how we should respond to foolishness and other fools. When we're responding to foolishness, I would think we could say, when I see it in me, and kind of challenged you at the beginning of the class, where have I been foolish? Is it in my speech? Is it in losing my temper? Is it in my finances? Is it in my relationships? Where is it in my faith? Where have I been foolish? Rather than just explaining it away, I need to actually recognize it and work on it. Verse 4, I love this. I think this was from Jake's class. The reward of humility and the fear of the Lord are riches, honor, and life. The fool has to be humble enough to come back admit that they have been foolish in some capacity, and then put the fear of the Lord in the place of their own arrogant thinking and choose to do things God's way. So when I see foolishness in me, I don't want to make excuses. I don't want to say, oh, but next time I'll do it. No, no, I want to admit, hey, Philip, I have been foolish. And I want to commit myself to be humble and to follow God more faithfully. When that foolishness shows up in our families, chapter 22, verse 15 has something to say about that. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, and the rod of discipline will remove it far from him. The older fool can be can endure discipline and never change. But thankfully, often the younger child, the foolishness that is there in our youth, discipline will cause us to pause and reflect and to listen to someone that we know is older and wiser and loves and cares about us. And so in my family, I want to make sure that I don't ignore foolishness. I'm not overreacting to it either. There's always going to be some foolishness in every child. But I'm working to mold and to lead those young people in our family. Not just in our family, but in our peers. Chapter 14, verse 7, this is very much in line with Chi Liang's comment. Chapter 14, verse 7. Leave the presence of a fool, or you will not discern words of knowledge. And this is kind of true with Christy's comment as well. Even with all the academic credentials in the world, if someone is being foolish, watch out. That rubs off on us rather quickly. And in public, I think it's wise for us to realize there are limits on our influence. We can be like Solomon. We can have the best of intentions. We can hope to impart wisdom to those around us. But there are times that people are not willing to listen to godly wisdom. Remember the riot in Ephesus from Acts chapter 19, verse 30 and 31. Paul never saw a large crowd he didn't want to preach to. And the fact that it was a riot did not dissuade him at all. I'll go preach to them. I'll straighten this out. And his friends are like, Paul, no. No, you cannot walk down into the middle of that riot. No one there is going to be thinking clearly or listening to you reasonably. You can't go. And it seems that he must have persisted. He must have really wanted to go to the extent in verse 31, the Asiarchs, who would have helped organize some of the Greek, like what we think of as before the Olympics, right? Some of the major athletic events there through Greece. These very influential citizens that Paul knew, they're telling him, Paul, you cannot change this. You cannot walk into that situation and accomplish what you're hoping. And that's the idea that we studied in chapter 9, verse 7 and verse 8. He who corrects a scoffer gets dishonor for himself. He who reproves a wicked man gets insults for himself. Do not reprove a scoffer, or he will hate you. Reprove a wise man, and he will love you. We're going to show others a lot about whether or not we are foolish by the heart we have when someone out of love and godliness seeks to guide us back towards the light and seeks to help us get back on the straight and narrow. We do not want to be like the scoffer of verse 7. And so we've got to learn this lesson. I don't want to be foolish by losing my temper. I don't want to be foolish by denying my faith. I don't want to be foolish by ignoring wise counsel. But I don't want to be foolish by thinking that I can walk up to every, you know, crazy event and every foolish person that somehow I'm going to turn them around and I'm going to get through to them. What's more likely is that they'll turn and trample us, just like Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount. And so be wise in the way that we approach those things. Other comments that you guys want to make about any of these four categories here for responding to foolishness as we wind the class down?
You know, Philip, you can have the best intentions and still be foolish about the way you do things. And I think about an example when one of my sons was on the Lord's table when he was young, and he got up there and he had his shirt was hanging out, shirt tail was hanging out, and his key fob was hanging down the side of his pants, and in between the bread and the fruit of the vine, I was just gonna go back there and chew him out. And he actually had the prayer for the fruit of the vine, and it was beautiful. And I almost messed that up. So you got to definitely be careful how you approach things, especially when you have good intention.
That's right. And so what part of the lesson on Sunday morning that I'm working on, kind of this part two of our marriage thing, is choosing the right timing and the right place. And yeah, that's a conversation that you as a father had the ability and the right to have, but the time and place, you stopped yourself and you're like, wait a minute, but I can't distract him right now. And you're able to look back and go, okay, I'm glad I didn't distract him in that moment.
Right.
Very good. Thanks, Glenn. So we want to recognize foolishness. We want to recognize it in ourselves, and we want to recognize what it means from the book of Proverbs so that we can put on that heart of wisdom that we're going to continue to study about. Paula, did I miss something? Did you have another comment? Did you have a comment, Paula?
No, I thought okay. It was a fabulous lesson. Thank
you. You were looking awfully thoughtful there. I thought you had one more comment. All right, guys, it's been a joy to be with you tonight. Thank you so much for participating in the class. Thank you for all the good comments and the feedback that we've been going through here. Look forward to our next topical lesson on Sunday about work and the kind of diligence that God expects from us. Everybody with teenagers this summer trying to get them to clean their room and mow the grass, don't miss this class. All right, everybody. We can leave the Zoom running for a few minutes if you'd like to visit, but we'll let Jake go ahead and stop the recording.
Thank you, Philip.
Thank you.